up here. And I promised two people that I would introduce myself today. Rabbi Turetsky and Rabbi Hanel Malay. Rabbi Turetsky, I let him drive Tzvi back, and I said there's no reason that he has to, after like fighting all those wars, he doesn't have to wait extra 15 minutes to go home in order for Rabbi Turetsky to introduce me. But if Rabbi Turetsky was here, he would have said that that he and Rabbi Bednarsh go way back, because I was his day camp counselor when he was 6 years old. And I'm sorry to say, don't come over to me afterwards, I don't have any dirt on him. He was like a regular boisterous 6 years old, but a 6 year old, but not particularly troublesome. He was always sort of the cute, lovable Rabbi Turetsky that he is now. And Michelle wanted me to give a pitch for Shir next year, that whoever stays Shunabet next year, there's a special joint Shunabet Shir for girls from different seminaries that meets in Gruss, where I teach philosophy once a week, and it's an okay shir. And anyway, Stay Shunabet is really encouraged to join that very special experience. Did I do a good job? Okay, and it's always a great pleasure to be here at Shalvim. My name is Asaf Bednarsh. I teach in the Gross Kollel, which is part of YU Smicha program, just a few minutes walk from here. And most importantly, I am Mrs. Bednarsh's husband. Okay, I wasn't taken prisoner of war. I didn't fight in any wars in Defend Shalvim. I sort of grew up in Brooklyn, a regular kid. So I'm not all that exciting. But to make up for that, we'll try to learn some Torah together and maybe deepen our appreciation and understanding of, I haven't been in any wars, but go back a couple thousand years to the Torah of what Yerushalayim is all about, what it means for us, and maybe what like Torah and Judaism and God and other such ideas that tie into Yerushalayim mean in our lives. I decided I wanted to go back in history to the first mention of Yerushalayim, no peeking at the sheet, in the Torah, or, you know, history as far as I know. Anyone know where the first place Yerushalayim is mentioned in the Torah? It's not called Yerushalayim. Till David HaMelech. Bereshit. Okay, where in Bereshit is it mentioned? peeking. So the first place we have any mention of Yerushalayim in the Torah is Makor number one, Bereshit Yudalid, the war of the five kings against the four kings, right? Hopefully we remember the stories, right? The four kings beat the five kings, and Lot was in Sodom, which is one of the five kings, and he got captured, so Avram went out and conquered the four kings and rescued his nephew Lot. And it says, Vayitzei melech Sodom likrato, Makor one, Achrei shivo meyakot ekdor la'omei v'tamlochim asher ito, el emek shavehu emek hamelech. The king of Sodom went out to greet Abraham after he came back from smiting Kedorlaomer and the kings with him to this certain place. O Malki Tzedek Melech Shalem, Malki Tzedek, the king of Shalem, Hotzi Lechem V'Yayin Uchahim Le'el Yom. Malki Tzedek, the king of Shalem, brought food and drink to Abraham and his weary soldiers after the battle, and he was a Kohen to the highest God. So the first time we have mention of Shalem, we learn two things. There was a king of Shalem, three things, called Malki Tzedek. He brought food and drink to people who were hungry and thirsty, and he was a Kohen to God. How do we know Shalem means Yerushalayim? Sort of suspiciously similar, right? Anyone know? You guys probably learn a lot of Tanakh here, right? How do you prove what a word means in Tanakh? Like, I just told you Shalem meant Yerushalayim. How would I prove that? The first or to other places that it's used, right? You always prove things in Tanakh, right? The best perish on Tanakh is Tanakh. You see how it's used someplace else, and you see what it means. So I just quoted a pasuk from 2. It says in Tehillim, you know how Tehillim works, hopefully, like Mishlei and Eov. You know, there's like a pasuk that says the same thing twice in parallel language. Vayhi v'shalem suko umonato b'tzion. Hashem's sukkah was in Shalem, and his home was in Tzion, meaning the Beis HaMikdash, right? The Beit HaMikdash was in Shalem and in Tzion. So Shalem is the same place as Tzion. We know Tzion means Yerushalayim. So obviously Shalem is just a short form of the word Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is the longer version. And Shalem is the abbreviated version, or the half version. Malki Tzedek is the king of Yerushalayim. So here we learn, what do we learn about Yerushalayim? Do you have a question? Okay, great. I love questions.
Is he the first, like, essential Kohen?
He was the first Kohen mentioned in Chumash. You know, we don't know what happened before him. I mean, not a ton of things happened in Chumash, especially the Medrash says he was Shem, the son of Noach. So then there really wasn't a lot before him. He was the first Kohen mentioned in the Chumash. It's very appropriate. The first Kohen mentioned in the Chumash was in Yerushalayim, right? That's where the Kohanim belonged, to serve Hashem. So obviously Yerushalayim is a special spiritual place, right? The Kohen to the highest God, meaning the real God, right, is in Yerushalayim. But there's something else about we learn about him, right? He gave food and drink to people who are hungry and thirsty. That sort of reminds us of the midot of Avraham Avinu. And what was his name? Malki Tzedek. Which part of that name is more significant for a king? Is more of the Kiddush? Right, Malki for a king is not all that much of a Kiddush. Malki Tzedek. Somehow he was the king of righteousness. Apparently, this king of Yerushalayim stood for righteousness, right? For justice, for kindness, for like giving food and drink to people who are hungry and thirsty. Now, is that coincidence? Is it just this one guy? Or was that the rule in Yerushalayim? So, is it just like there happened to be one king of Yerushalayim whose name was Tzedek? Or was that the, was that in the local constitution? So if you look, for example, at number three, Vayhi, this is Sefer Yoshua. This is the first half of Sefer Yoshua. You know how everyone learns Sefer Yoshua? You get through the first half, there's all these wars, it's like relatively exciting. Then you get to the second half when they're just dividing up like what district goes to which Shevet. And then you stop your whole project of learning Nach. Hopefully not. But here it talks about the wars, and this is the famous war against the kings of this area. Number three, Vayhi Chishmo Adoni Tzedek Melech Yerushalayim Kilachad Yoshua Ta'ai Vayachrima Kasher Asali Richo L'Malka Kenos Ala Ayil L'Malka V'chi Yishlum Yoshvei Givonet Yisrael Vayu B'Kirbam. Okay, we don't have to read the whole thing. He gets the king of Eglon and the king of Yarmush and the king of Chevron and all these kings with him, and they fight against Yoshua. But what's the name of the king of Yerushalayim? Adoni Tzedek, right? Adon is like a king, it's a master, a ruler. Apparently, all the way from the time of Avraham Avinu through the time of Yehoshua, the king of Yerushalayim was always called Malki Tzedek or Adoni Tzedek, meaning the ruler of Tzedek, of righteousness. Apparently, Tzedek, Tzedakah, was something that was very inherent in the lifestyle, in the traditions, in the culture of Yerushalayim. As a matter of fact, the Or HaChaim on Makor number one, I'm sure you've seen Makros Gedolos, not in the Torah Chaim, but the old-fashioned Makros Gedolos, they have the Or HaChaim HaKadosh. He says, why is it necessary for the Torah to teach us that Malki Tzedek, the king of Shalem, like brought out bread and wine, food and drink? Says the Torah wants a contrast to different midot. Like there's a midah when someone has needs and you care about them and you try to help them out. That was the midah of Avraham Avinu and of Malki Tzedek. And then there's the midah of the king of Sodom, who was saved by Avram, but who didn't offer Avram anything, who just asked to take some of the things back from the war. As a matter of fact, if Yerushalayim stands for Tzedek, for righteousness, for kindness, what city in Sefer Bereishis stands for the opposite of that? Sodom, right? There's Melech Sodom and Malki Tzedek Melech Shalem. What did Sodom stand for? Anyone tell me why did Hashem destroy Sodom? I know it says they were very evil. What evil thing did they do? They didn't do Achnasat Orchim, right? They, as we know from the story of the two strangers, right? So we know in this one story, right? They didn't do Achnasat Orchim. Okay. Do we know if that was a general pattern? Like, is that what they always did wrong, or is that just one story? Anyone want to prove to me, how would we prove if we had a pasuk in Parsha and Chumash? Sodom were evil and got destroyed. We want to know exactly what they did all the time that was so bad. Where would we look to find the answer to that? I told you earlier.
When Hashem was telling Avraham about to do his visit, someone cried out to him.
They cried out to him, although that's still very vague.
Right.
right? The best Perush on Tanakh is?
Tanakh.
So, now, of course you can look in the Midrash. And the Midrash will tell you, right? Everyone knows the Midrash. Whenever poor people came, they wouldn't give them tzedakah, or they would give them tzedakah, but they wouldn't sell them any food for it, and then they would die of hunger. And all these terrible ways they would torture and be mean to poor people. But how did the Midrash know that? The answer is that Chazal, when they wrote the Midrash, knew Tanakh. And they looked in Makor number 4. It's an explicit pasuk in Yechezkel. You want to know where all the Midrashic ideas we get about Sodom come from? Yechezkel number 4. Hine zeh haya avon Sodom achoteich. This was the sin of your sister Sodom. This is giving Musar to the Jews. Gaon savat lechem. Gaon really means pride, right? Like gaiva, right? They were proud and full of bread. V'shalvat hashkeit. And they had shalva, they had serenity and quiet. Higher level of notah was for Sodom and her suburbs. V'yad aniva evyon lo'echzika. And they did not support aniva evyon, the poor people. You want to know what was wrong with Sodom? It's explicit. It tells us in Yechezkel. What was wrong with Sodom is they were mean to poor people. You know, in if you ever, I don't know, sometimes read like police reports or something, right? Right, or old-fashioned books, they talk about sodomy, right? Sodomy means like being like Sodom. Okay, I'm not going to be too explicit in mixed company, but that's referring to, right, the type of homosexuality that was at least they talked about doing in the story with Lot and the Malachim. And like, that's wrong with Sodom, that's sodomy. But the Midrash tells us not that way. The Midrash tells us they weren't really necessarily any more homosexual than anyone else. They only wanted to do this to the guests to teach them a lesson that they would go tell people, don't go to Sodom because they're really mean to you. And look at the things they do. It was just their way of sending a message that no one should come and ask for money. Really, they were not sexually deviant in Sodom. They just came up with all kinds of crazy, ridiculous tactics in order to torture poor people who came to ask for hospitality or for food and drink or for money, so that they would tell all the other poor people not to come to Sodom to ask for money anymore. That was a real sodomy, again, with apologies to all the American law codes, but real sodomy has nothing to do with the fact that what they tried to do to these strangers. Real sodomy means not being willing to host other people, to share your food with others, to share your money with others, not being kind to those who are poor. It means being rich like Sodom and not wanting to share with those who are poor. And then Midrash says, they said, we're rich, everyone's gonna come schnorr for money here. So therefore, let's be really, really mean and torture people who come so that they'll send out the message, don't come ask us for money because we don't want to share our money with you. That's sodomy. That's Sodom. And what city is the opposite of Sodom? Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim, what this guy do, Malki Tzedek Melech Shalem? He was not in the 4 kings, he was not in the 5 kings, he had nothing to do with Avram. He was a firm guy, but he had nothing to do with anything. What did he do? Oh, Avram's soldiers are tired, they're hungry and thirsty. Let me bring them some lechem v'yayin, because that's the right thing to do. The exact Sodom didn't help people who came ask them for help. Malki Tzedek from Yerushalayim went and offered to help people who were not even in his city, just because he knew they were passing nearby and they could use some assistance, just like Avram Avinu himself. Avram Avinu stood for Yerushalayim. Here's an interesting question. Who, in this whole parsha, story of Avram Avinu, who went back and forth between Avram and Sodom? Who was like on the border there, not really sure, we're not really sure where he belongs, with Avram or with Sodom? Lot. Lot is a tricky one, right? On the one hand, he moves to Sodom. On the other hand, he's Machdis Orchim, big time, right? Real Mesiras Nefesh. Right, I mean, literal Mesiras Nefesh, he almost got killed. Right, Lot, on the one hand, is really a Talmud of Avram Avinu. He belongs with Avram and Malki Tzedek. He's for Tzedek 100%, even risking his life. On the other hand, he moved to Sodom. So, what happens to Lot? All right, what happens to Lot? He gets saved. And he deserves to get saved. But here's the tricky part. What happens when you have the right values, but you move someplace where people have the wrong values? Anyone know what's dangerous there? You get affected, or even if you don't, how about your kids, right? Maybe you're really strong. Lot was pretty strong. I mean, I admire him, right? But what? How do you raise your kids in Sodom, right? How did Lot raise his kids in Sodom, right? What did he manage to teach them the values of Avraham Avinu, that we believe in Tzedek, we don't believe in what they do in this town? Or no, they're affected by their environment. They grew up like everyone else in Sodom. very unclear, right? What happens to Lot's, I mean, two daughters, right? what happens to Lot's daughters? I'll tell you a little clue. What did Lot's daughters think happened after stone was destroyed? The whole world was destroyed. Why didn't they know it was only stone? Like, didn't they know there was stone was like weirdos? That stone were outliers? Apparently they thought stone was normal, right? If stone was destroyed, everyone was destroyed, right? They didn't learn, they didn't internalize that stone was fundamentally wrong. They just thought that was normal life. That's why they were afraid normal life was destroyed. Okay, what happened in the end? Who knows where the story of Lot's daughters ends? Marker 5. What are the names of the nations that come from Lot's daughters? Ammon and Moab, right? Anyone know what country that is nowadays? What country is Ammon and Moab nowadays? Jordan, exactly. Ammon and Moab is what we call Jordan, right? And Israelis call the mountains. You ever look like across the Yarden River and there are these big mountains? Those are called Har Moav, right, in modern day Hebrew. That's Ammon and Moab. As a matter of fact, what's the capital of Jordan? What? What's the capital of Jordan? Anyone? All right, what's the capital of Russia? What's the capital of Canada? Now, the capital of Jordan is Amman. Amman is just Ammon, right? And it's really called in Hebrew and Arabic Rabat Amman, which is Rabat Bnei Ammon that's mentioned in the Chumash, right? Okay, that's just geography we should know. Ammon and Moab is Jordan. Says the Pasuk, number 5, where does Lot end up? Does he end up part of Klal Yisrael or not? Number 5, Lo Yavo Amoni Moavi Bekal Hashem. Gam Dor Asiri Lo Yavo Lohem Bekal Hashem Ad Olam. What's the Pesach? Sefer Dvarim, Ammon and Moab are not allowed to intermarry into the Jewish people. Forever, right? An Ammoni or Moabi man is not allowed to marry into the Jewish people. Okay, whether a Moabite woman is allowed to marry into the Jewish people, with a big halachic debate, which we'll read about the events surrounding that in a week. But the Ammonim cannot enter Kal Hashem. Why? Why not? What's so bad about them? Al devar asher lo kidmu etchem balechem v'amayim v'derech tzeitchem mimitzrayim, etc. Because they didn't bring us food and drink when we were on the derech. When we were in the midbar leaving Mitzrayim, they didn't bring us food and drink. Basically, this Pasuk 5 is going back to Pasuk 1. There's Sdom, who don't share food and drink with others, who don't care about other people, who don't do tzedek. And there's Malki Tzedek, who brings lechem v'yayin to people who are on the road. Lot's daughters had a choice. They could stick with their midos they learned from stone and teach that to their children and descendants, or they could go back to Avraham. Unfortunately, the education they got in stone taught them that when there are hungry and thirsty people on the road, it's not my problem and I don't care. It's very fitting that the last thing they did in Chumash was, right? In addition to the story of Bilam, which they mentioned here, the last thing they did was to have the midos of stone, and therefore they ended up getting kicked out of Am Yisrael. They chose the other path. If they chose the other path, then there's no room for them here. Apparently they stuck with stone. One last pasuk before we get into the philosophy. Makor 6. Ultimately, this is the big question. You want to know history, Jewish history. There's Yerushalayim, there's stone. There's tzedek, and there's selfishness. There's tzedek and there's corruption, righteousness and corruption. Lot made the wrong choice. What did the Jews do? What explains Jewish history? So interestingly, we know what happened in Jewish history. The Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, and there was Galus, there was Geula, there was Churban again, right? What was behind that history? I'm sure a lot of things, but look what Yeshaya says in number 6. This is the Haftorah might be familiar with from the Shabbos before Tisha B'Av, Shabbos Chazon. I just quote a few psukim, but says Yeshaya, Lulei Hashem Tzvakot Hotir Lanu Sarit Kana. If not for the fact that Hashem had left us a little bit of a remnant, Kistom Hayinu Amorah Diminu. We were punished, we were almost like Sodom and Amorah. Shim'u Dvar Hashem Kitzinei Sodom. What does Yeshaya say to the Jewish people? Listen to what I have to say in the name of Hashem, you officers of Sodom. Hazino Torat Eloheinu Am Amorah, you nation of Amorah. What's Yeshaya's indictment to the Jewish people? You're acting like Sodom and Amorah. What does he mean by that? What's the sodomy here? Pasuk Chav Aleph, 6, Pasuk Chav Aleph. How has this Kiryat Nemana, this faithful city, Yerushalayim, become a harlot? It used to be filled with mishpat, with justice, tzedek yalinva, and righteousness stayed there. Now they're murderers. You Your silver is impure and your wine is watered down. You rip people off. Your officers are evil and they're just a bunch of thieves. They just want bribes and kickbacks. You're supposed to. They don't care to judge for an orphan. And the fight, the defense of a widow does not come before them. Meaning, what happened to Yerushalayim? All these rich people became in charge. All these powerful people became in charge. They just cared about bribes, about making money. They cared about justice for their friends. But the widows and orphans, like the poor people who had no protexia, who had no one on their side, was not their problem. They didn't care. Lachin, Pasuk Kaf Dalet, Nom Adon Hashem Tzvakot. Yerushalayim was destroyed, says Yeshaya, because they stopped caring about the weak and unfortunate. Because they stopped being the city of Tzedek. Therefore, what will happen? Says Hashem, right, the strength of Israel. Hashem says, eventually the time will come when I will take vengeance on my enemies, meaning redeem the Jewish people. I will take you in my hands, says Hashem, and cleanse out all your impurities, and take out all the impurities. Okay, how will the Geula happen? I'll give you judges like originally, and advisors like the old days. What will happen in the Geula? Hashem will inspire the Jewish people in Yerushalayim. He will help them to have the right judges, the right philosophies, to be called the Eretz Tzedek, to be a city of righteousness. A city of faithfulness. Tzion b'mishpat tivadet. Tzion will be redeemed with mishpat. V'shaveh b'tzedakah. And those who are exiled will come back through tzedakah. What does the Yeshaya say? He says the Jewish history is all based on these psukim. When we were in Yerushalayim, and we were corrupt, and we didn't care about the poor, and we didn't care about the powerless, the Churban came. When we once again stand for tzedek and ne'emanot, when we once again start doing justice and righteousness, then Tzion will be redeemed. The story of Jewish history then seems to be these two aspects, these two poles. Yerushalayim stone. Where does Loko? Where do we go? When we went the wrong way, that was the end of Yerushalayim. The Geula will come when we choose the right path, and Yerushalayim will come back with Tzedek and Mishpat. Now we start the shiur. The question is, what does all of this have to do with religion? Everything I just said to you, sounds like, you ever hear like these liberal social justice people talking? I don't know if you follow politics, whatever. Like there's a lot of liberals around who believe in social justice, right? The most important thing for the world is that the rich share with the poor, right? That, you know, that we care about those who are unfortunate, who haven't had the same opportunities that we have, that et cetera, right? And basically it sounds like that's what the Chumash saying Yerushalayim is all about. That's what they did in Yerushalayim, what they didn't do in Stone, great. But what does that have to do with religion? Most of these social justice liberals are not so traditionally religious. You don't find a lot of Frumkeit there. So does this go with religion? This social justice, caring about people, is this like a different option than serving Hashem? Does this go with serving Hashem? What's the relationship between the Kohen Le'el Elyon, the religious part of Yerushalayim, and the Beit HaMikdash, and the Tzedek part of Yerushalayim? Anyone? Great. Obviously. Yeah. But I think it's more than that. I want to look for a second. See, you guys have spent almost a year in Israel. You know that one of the things that, okay, besides the fact that you come to Israel to learn for a year in Shalvim for Women, which is great because like you can learn full-time for a year, which you didn't do in America because, you know, there's a lot of things going on in life. And you get to be with very, very special people like Rabbi Goldsmith and Rabbi Turetsky and all the other very special people here. And my wife. And it's just like a great chaver and an amazing experience. And it's a really big privilege. I'm on tape, so I can't appear, but a big privilege to be in a seminary like Shalvim for Women. But also, like Eretz Yisrael, sometimes there's a new insight and a slightly different perspective that you get when you learn Torah in Eretz Yisrael. And part of one of the things I learned when I made Aliyah 13 years ago is that when you read Tanakh in Eretz Yisrael, like the land is a much bigger part of it. You start paying attention to the land. I'm sure you've done it to your limb, and you're like, okay, this is where, you know, that happened. Like, remember David and Goliath? Right, well, okay, it was right here, like, right there where your feet are, etc. You know, you go to Ma'arat HaMachpelah, and of course the Kotel, which probably went to many times before we came for a year in Israel. But the land is much more a part of it. Is there something to do with the land? Like, is there something in the geography about Sdom? Is there something in the geography about Yerushalayim? Is there something in the geography of these places, in the geography of Eretz Yisrael, that has to do with how religious we are and how righteous we are? And I think the answer is yes. And maybe you learned this. If you learned with Menachem Liteg, you probably did. Look at number 7. Anyone know what country Sdom was like? It says so, number 7. Anyone remember on your own? Sdom was like a different country in the Middle East. Number 7. V'gam Lod ha'olech l'avram ha'yatzon v'karver olim. Lod had a lot of sheep and cattle and tents, which is money in those days. The land cannot handle both of them together. They had too much property. They couldn't live together. Which is, of course, interesting. Like, if I have a lot of money, you have a lot of money. Like, I have a lot of sheep that needs to graze. You have a lot of sheep that needs to graze. And we can't live together. And based on your life experience, you think that's an objective fact of how much grass there is and how many sheep they are? Or you think it has to do with, like, our relationship and our hashkafa? Okay, I'm a little older than you. I've been around the block a few times. It's very rarely that objectively there's no room for two people to share the space. Whether or not there's room for a lot of people to share the space depends on their attitude, depends on the way they look at things. Lot somehow did not have enough room. He couldn't make enough money with Avram. No room. I'm not making enough money. They had a fight. Avram said to Lot, let's not have a fight between my shepherds and your shepherds, and between me and you, we're relatives. Behold, the land is before you. Separate from me. If you go left, I go right. If you go right, I go left. Now, he just lied, but fine. Lot lifted his eyes and saw the plains by the Jordan River. It was all well-watered. Mashke. Of course, it's before Hashem destroyed, like the Torah is telling the reader. Don't think nowadays when it's at the Dead Sea. This is before Hashem destroyed Sdom and Amorah. It was a well-watered paradise. Kigan Hashem, it was like Gan Eden ke Eretz Mitzrayim, like Eretz Mitzrayim. Bo'achat Tzohar, all the way to Tzohar. He saw it was like Eretz Mitzrayim, like Egypt. Lot chose that whole low-lying plains by the not-yet Dead Sea. And he left eastwards, and they separated. Avram Yashav Eretz Canaan. Avram stayed in Eretz Canaan. Velot Yashav Ereki Karvi Yalhal Stom. And Lot went in the plains by the river and pitched his tents to Stom. The Anshei Stom were in Mechatim Lashem Ol. The people in Stom were very evil and wicked to Hashem. Question for you. Avram stayed in Eretz Canaan. Lot went to Stom, which is apparently not in Eretz Canaan. I have a simple question to you. Let's say you have a roommate. Let's say, or a relative, a sister. And you don't get along, you have to split up. So what would you say to her? Would you say, you know, let's split up. You know, I'll maybe go, like, I'll go to Yerushalayim. You know, why don't you go, like, you know, move to, I don't know, a church or something. Why don't you go move someplace totally not from? Like, obviously, it would be a very irresponsible, terrible thing for you to say. How does Avram tell Lot, let's split up, and you go to Sdom? How does Avram give his nephew Lot the option of going to Sdom? You know, really? Like, you have a nephew who lives with you, and it's time to get space, so you send them someplace where they'll be totally not from? Like, is that a good thing to do? How could Avram give Lot the option of going to Sdom? Anyone know the answer? No, because I lied. When did I lie? What did Avram say to Sdom? What were his two choices? You go right, and I'll go left, or you go left and I'll go right. Let me ask you a simple question. If I say to you right now, you know, let's go different places this afternoon for the celebration. You can go left or you can go right. Like, have I made myself clear? No, like, which way is left and right? You know, in a country, right? It's very, like, what's left and right? Like, that's not the way you talk. How do you talk? You say you go north, south, east, west. So what did Avram say to Lot? So let's think for a second. Kedma. What direction is Kedma, anyone?
East.
East. Kedma is east. In the biblical language of the Torah, again, the geography, Kedem means east. What does Kedem really mean?
Right.
In front of me, forward, right? Kedma. Forward is east. If forward is east, then what direction is backwards?
West.
And what direction is the right hand? Now you knew. Oh, now I'm really testing your geography. If forward is east, what direction is my right hand?
South.
And what direction is my left hand? North. My right hand, Yemin, is south. What's the southernmost country in the Middle East? Yemen. Yemen, Tayman. That's all the way in the south. Small means north. When Avram chased the four kings, he chased them to Chova, Asher Mismol Damasek. Doesn't mean Chova, which was left of Damascus. That's not how you write like battles. It's Chova, which is north of Damascus. Small means north, and Yemin means south in biblical Hebrew. What did Avram say to Lot? You go north, I'll go south. You go south, I'll go north. What's south and north where he lived? Think about it. Like, what's south and north? Let's say he's living in Hebron or Yerushalayim. What are the choices he's giving him? Map of Israel? Map of Israel? What's north? North Yerushalayim is Be'el, Shechem, right? Shomron, south of Yerushalayim. You could go to Be'er Sheva, you could go to Hebron, you could go to Harei Hebron. Basically, north and south is the middle of Israel, right? This, you know how Israel is built? Jordan River, Mediterranean Sea, going up to the mountains. North and south is that mountain range in the middle of Israel. It's not going down to the low-lying lowlands, the Kikar. Abram said to Lot, go north or south in Eretz Canaan, in those mountains in the middle of Israel. And Lot on his own chose not to go north or south, but Vayisal Lot Mikedem. Avram, Chas v'Shalom, Avram did not say, Lot, you want to go to Sodom. He said, exactly not. He said, you want to go north or south? Go north or south. Don't go east or west. And Lot on his own chose to go east. Vayisal Lot Mikedem, he chose to go east to Sodom. Apparently, Avram knew, you want to stay on the right path? Stay in the mountains in the middle of Israel, north-south axis. Right? What we call, you know, the Yishuvim. From Hebron through Alon Shvud and Efrat, Yerushalayim, up to Beit El and all the Yishuvim Binyamin. Lot decided to go east, which is apparently someplace for to go if you didn't want to be from anymore. Okay, what does all this have to do with geography? We still have to figure out. But there's something going on here. He went the direction that Avram didn't offer him. And there's one more clue. What's the clue? He went to Sodom, which was compared to which country? Mitzrayim. Of course, why would Lot have wanted to go someplace like Mitzrayim? He had been to Mitzrayim, right? Meaning, maybe he liked Mitzrayim. He was impressed with Mitzrayim. Avram was disgusted by Mitzrayim. Couldn't wait to get out of there. But maybe Lot was impressed with Mitzrayim. Okay, what's the difference between Mitzrayim and Eretz Canaan? What's the difference between east and west and north and south? What does all this have to do with God and Judaism?
For Avram, when he went to Mitzrayim, between what happened with Paro and what happened with Abimelech.
Okay, there's a difference already between Paro and Abimelech, right? Paro is much worse than Abimelech. Okay, but let's try to get it a little deeper, bring in the geography. The answer to all of this is in Pasuk number 8. In my humble opinion meaning that I'm not such a big rabbi, but I happen to be 100% right. In my humble opinion, I think the key to all this is Makor 8. Ki ha'aretz asher atav Hashem l'rishta. Hashem, through Moshe, tells Bnei Israel, when they're ready to go into Eretz Yisrael. Sefer Dvarim, Parsha Akev. The land you're coming to inherit, lo k'eretz Mitzrayim hi. Eretz Canaan is the opposite of Eretz Mitzrayim. Asher yitzatem misham, which you left. Asher tizrat zarachav ishkita v'raglacha k'yan hayarach. Where you plant your seeds and water with your feet like a vegetable garden. Okay, there's a big machlok about water with your feet means. But the simple shot, what does it mean to water with your feet? How do you water with your feet? Simple shot. What? You go get the water and you carry it, right? I go get the water and I carry it. And that's how they watered vegetable gardens in ancient times. You look in the Gemara, it always says vegetable garden, you have to carry water, and as opposed to other things, which it's enough for them to get rained on. Apparently, Eretz Mitzrayim is different than Eretz Canaan. In Eretz Mitzrayim, you have to carry the water from where? Of course, the Nile. As a matter of fact, the Nile also overflowed its banks, and there was a lot of water from the Nile. But the land you're going to inherit, Eretz Canaan, is a land of mountains and valleys. It's a mountainous land. In a mountainous land, can you carry water? Don't imagine mountain technology. Can you carry water up a mountain? Imagine you live in Yerushalayim. Where's the nearest water? You know, I don't mean a spring here and a spring there. That you're lucky. That'll water like two guys' fields. Water is in the Jordan River. Can you carry water from the Yarden River up to Yerushalayim 3,000 years ago? Or even 2 or 1,000 years ago? Of course not. Baruch Shalom. Right? So what's the way to get water? Limtar Shamayim. It rains. It doesn't rain as much in Egypt. But it rains a lot here. You drink with the rainwater, and you grow crops from the rainwater. Okay, so Israel's better than Egypt, because in Egypt you have to schlep water from the Nile, and you can, because it's very flat, and in Israel it just rains. What's better? This is a great personality test. Right? If I want to do a personality test, I'd ask you the following question. What would you rather have for your job, for your parnasa? Would you rather have someplace where you have to work hard and schlep the water, but it's always there, and then you always grow food to eat, but you have to work hard? Or would you rather have someplace where it just rains? You don't have to work so hard. You plant your seeds and it rains on its own. Of course, the downside is, if it doesn't rain, now I don't mean to be harsh or anything, but if it doesn't rain, what happened in the old days? If it didn't rain, you died, right? Old days, I don't mean the Chumash. Just read The Good Earth by Pearl Buck, right? That's 100 years ago. And, right? And if there's no rain, everyone died. So what would you rather have? Now, probably people would say, you know, I would ask, do you want an aggressive investment portfolio or a conservative investment portfolio? What would you rather have? Have to work hard, but the water's there? Or have the water come from heavens? If it comes, you're lucky. And if not, you die. I think a lot of people here might actually rather, right? We're all like very responsible, old-fashioned people. We don't want to take chances. We're risk-averse. So why is Israel better? Why is Israel better if, like, it gets the rain? Like, that's very risky to depend on rain. Like, sometimes it rains, sometimes it doesn't. You know, every year in Israel now, sometimes there's a drought, and sometimes there's enough water, sometimes there isn't. And, you know, and the Kinneret's losing all its water because of what the Pasuk says. It all depends on the rain. To this very day, the Israeli economy, we're not going to die, Baruch Hashem, with modern technology. We can always buy food from another country and buy water from another country or spend a lot of money, you know, desalinating water. But the economy is going to die if, right, if there's no rain and there's nothing we can do about it. With all the modern technology, we can't make rain. Okay, I happen to have a friend, an old friend, who patented a way to make rain. But I don't think it really works. He keeps telling me if I give him $5 million, he'll try it and see if it really works. But to this very day, you know, like there are people who still live that way. If you have a farm in Israel, then you know what? We have modern technology. You can always buy water. The problem is, if you have to buy water, then the water costs more than you would sell your fruit for at the end of the year. Right? So you have to just close your business. So it depends on the rain. You might have no money for the whole year if it doesn't rain. So what's better, Israel or Egypt? I understand why Lot picked Sodom, which is why was Sodom like Mitzrayim? Remember, no Dead Sea. That was after all the salt, right? Remember the salt? Right? In those days, the Dead Sea was a live sea. And Sodom was right on the Dead Sea, and there were all these little brooks and little rivers that carried the water, and everyone had as much water as they wanted. Worst comes worst, they had to schlep it to their field. I understand Lot's decision. So why is Israel better? Why does Hashem think Israel's better?
I just have a question.
Question.
Sorry. But don't depend on, like, don't both situations depend on rain? Like, the Nile would overflow, and, like, that's how you get it. But, like, also for you to have the Nile, you would need rain to come down anyway.
Yes, but I don't know if the Nile ever really dried up. Like, it comes from such a big basin that, theoretically, yes, but practically, you know, maybe like once in 1,000 years. Like realistically, statistically, you could count on the Nile. Okay.
It's almost impossible to forget Hashem.
In Israel, it's impossible to forget Hashem, right? Imagine, like, if every day, like, if your parents, like, their job, like, all the money, like, you earned, like, whether they'd have any money at all, just depended on whether or not it rained, which is pretty rare nowadays for us. But imagine, like, all the money your family had, whether you get kicked out of your house, whether you'd have money to pay tuition, everything, just depended on the rain. You would really think a lot about Hashem, right? You would really, like, daven with kavana every morning. Of course, that's not the fact. Most of our parents' jobs, you know, they have, like, a steady job, they work at a company, whatever. And, of course, that also depends on Hashem. But it's not as in your face, right? It looks like we could just coast. Right, like whatever, like my father's a lawyer, he works for a law firm, And of course you never know what can happen. But I can assume that everything's okay. Like, why would anything bad happen? And I'll have money, I'll be okay. He has to work hard, right? They don't pay you for not doing anything in the law firms. You put in a lot of hours, right? Like Mitzrayim. Okay, so that's what the Chumash is saying. Look at the end of Makor 8. Eretz Yisrael Shem Elokecha Doreisho Ta. Tamidei Nei Hashem Elokecha Bamei Yishit HaShana V'Yadach Harit Shana. Why is Israel better? It's not better if you ask an economist. I have no idea. I've never met a Nobel Prize winning economist. I came close a few times. I did, but that was when I was just 16 and a college student, and I didn't really I didn't know enough to be able to ask him good questions. But if you ask an economist, he might say Mitzrayim is better. But if you ask a religious person, if you ask Hashem, if you ask Moshe Rabbeinu, if you ask the Torah, what's better? It's better to be in a country where everything like runs smoothly and you don't have to like worry about whether Hashem's going to give you food to eat. Or it's better to be in a country where you get up every morning and you say, boy, I hope it rains. Hashem, please bring the rain. And you know that everything is in the hands of Hashem. I think the answer is clear. You are a better person if you're in a country where you see everything's in the hands of Hashem than if you live a lifestyle where you think you can take care of yourself. Of course, either way, it's in the hands of Hashem, right? Even if your father's a job at a law firm, I mean, people get fired. You know, I mean, I don't want to say any bad things happen. You never know what can happen. Someone can have a heart attack. We're all in the hands of Hashem. But still, it looks to some people like they're okay, they take care of themselves. And it looks to other people like Hashem takes care of them. That's the difference between Mitzrayim and between Eretz Israel. By the way, to this very, there's a phrase like that. Anyone ever hear the phrase, there's no atheist in a foxhole? Oh, great. Excellent. I thought that was, like, so old-fashioned. Either it's not, or you guys are more old-fashioned, which is increasing my respect. What is a fox? What's a foxhole?
Dangerous place.
Uh-oh, what's a foxhole?
A
foxhole is where, like, remember old-fashioned battles where, like, they used to just shoot guns at each other? Right? Like, you know, World War I style? So they're shooting guns at each other. I don't want to get shot. So what do? I like jump up, I shoot my gun, and then I duck into this like hole that I dig in the ground, and the bullets whiz over my head. That's a foxhole, right? Like the foxes dig their tunnels in the ground. So there's no atheist in a foxhole, meaning when the bullets are whizzing over my head, then all of a sudden everyone remembers Hashem, right? Everyone's like, everyone davens then, right? When you know that you depend on God and that it's not up to you, then all of a sudden everyone davens. When it looks like you take care of yourself, that's when you forget Hashem. That's what the Rashbam says in number 9. Ki aretz sher tava shama l'rishalo ki aretz b'shrayim kein shita parshiot alalu. This is the flow of these parshiot. Shrichan ten l'shmort v'tzot Hashem al-keichem. You have to keep the mitzvot. Ki aretz hazot tova mi'aretz b'shrayim l'shom mitzvot. Israel is better if you keep the mitzvot. V'ra mikol aretz lo shomrein, and worse if you don't keep the mitzvot. Ki aretz sher tava shama enik aretz b'shrayim shein shrichan l'matar v'in tovim mechata im b'torach hashkatz k'otem yeshlam lechem. It's not like Mitzrayim where you don't need the rain, and whether you're good or evil, whether you care about Hashem or not, you just work hard and you water your crops. Well, Eretz Yisrael, imatem shomrit mitzvot ha'inei Hashem al-kachah b'lashkot tabim tar shamayim yirishat Hashem al-yadach rishana l'tate matar ve'itat zorech. But in Israel, it's not up to you. You can't work hard. Our ancestors in Israel cannot work hard and get water. No matter how hard you work, you can't get water up to Hebron or Yerushalayim or Shem or Beit El or Gush Etzion. It's too high up. You just had to do the mitzvot and daven to Hashem. And therefore, Eretz Yisrael is a better place to be religious. And it's a worse place. Mitzrayim is a better place to forget about Hashem. What happened to Lot here? You know, Avraham, if we think about it, like, you know, we all know Avraham was a very uniquely impressive character. But he was also very much out of sync with his times, right? I mean, he was talking about Hashem, and not a lot of people knew that. Here he was, everything Hashem, Hashem, Hashem. It's all Be'ezrat Hashem, Baruch Hashem, you know, Mirza Hashem. And Lot was not so committed to this. He had trouble handling this. What did Lot say? You know what? You want to separate? Avram said to Lot, go north or south. Stay on the mountaintop. Stay in Eretz Canaan where you feel close to Hashem. And Lot said, I had enough of this. I'm going to Sdom, which is the lowland right near a river like Mitzrayim. I'm going someplace where I can forget about Hashem and just take care of myself. Quote, unquote. That was Lot's rebellion against Avraham. That's why he went in the wrong direction. And now, let us see the irony, by the way. Of course, what's the irony? Lot went to Sdom. All the people in Sdom didn't care about Hashem, right? They didn't need God. What particularly word in the pasuk did they not need from Hashem? Matar. They didn't need Hashem because they didn't care about the rains, right? They could take care of themselves. Ironically, what happened to Sodom? How did they get destroyed? Makor 10. Vahashem himtir al Sodom v'yalam arago frit va'esh mi'ed Hashem v'shvayim. What did Hashem bring down to Sodom? Himtir. He brought them rain. Ironically, they thought they didn't need any rain, and it didn't matter what they did because they didn't need Hashem. And ironically, in the end, everyone needs Hashem. Hashem showed them that the rain makes a big difference to them, and he rained down fire and brimstone and destroyed them. Not our topic, but a good tangent. Lot's wife looked back and became a pillar of salt. Why'd she become a pillar of salt?
Because she wanted to tell the neighbors that...
After she told the neighbors about the salt, right? Okay, is that Pshuto Shel Mikra?
No.
It's great. It's amazing. But what's the Pshuto Shel Mikra? Why'd she become a pillar of salt? I apologize. This is a tangent. But anyone's brother's bar mitzvah parsha is Nitzavim by any chance? No one has a brother's bar mitzvah is Nitzavim? What does it say happened in Nitzavim to Sodom and Amorah? Gafrit v'melach sreifach al artzah lo tidaraz lo tasmiach lo yaleba kol esev kemapechat Sodom v'amorah admot zvayim asher afach Hashem v'apo v'kamato. Gafrit v'melach was what overturned stone. Brimstone and salt. It rained brimstone and salt. I know it doesn't say salt in Bereishis. You have to go to Devarim. With brimstone comes salt. I don't even know what brimstone is. It's just gafrit. I hope it's a real thing. But salt. Now, let me ask you a simple question. If salt rained down from the heaven, and the Malachim tell you to run away, you run before the acid rain of salt catches up with you. What happens if you stop to look back? You stop to look back. That's it. It caught up to you. He had to keep running. It was at his heels. As soon as his wife stopped and looked back, she got covered with gafrit v'melach and turned into a pillar of salt. Because that's it. She was just buried under the rain of salt. That's how she turned into a pillar of salt. She wasn't transmogrified. She just stopped. And when you stop, then the rain catches up with you. Okay. Then Malachim warned her. All right. Why she turned around is a whole shear, but not for now. Now, let's get back to our topic. Now, I think we're ready to tie everything up. Simple question. Can anyone now tell me why they think Sodom were so mean to poor people? And the Malki Tzedek and the people in Yerushalayim were so kind to poor people? Anyone have a theory here? What's your name, by the way?
Basia.
Basia. Oh.
Yeah.
Yes, Basia. Basia, the blouse cousin.
Yeah.
Right.
So maybe it's because in Sodom, when you think that there's so much Hashem and that you control, it's like, why can't these people just take care of themselves? When you're Shalim, you know that everything's from Hashem, so if you're a person...
Aha, fascinating. In Sodom, when these guys made a lot of money, who did they give credit for making all the money?
Themselves.
I made the money because I worked hard, right? Vishkita v'ravacha. I worked hard. When I get credit for all my money, then if someone else is poor, what am I going to say to them? I mean, I might be super nice, but on the average, what am I going to say to them? No, buddy, get a job. I worked hard for my money. If you work hard, you would also make money. Which is a little naive. Of course, you have to work hard to make money, but it's not so posh. Besides working hard, you have to have the right privileges, and you have to grow up the right way, and have the right society, and have the right resources. And, you know, but if I credit myself for all my money, why would I want to share it with anyone else? I deserve it. That's Sodom. In Sodom, this is the interface of Bein Adam L'Makom, Bein Adam L'Chaviro. In Sodom, they really didn't believe that what they had came from Hashem. They didn't think they needed God. They took care of themselves. If I take care of myself, then you take care of yourself. Then why should I share with you? I deserve it. In Yerushalayim, it was very different. No one in Yerushalayim could ever think they deserved their money. It would be stupid. How could they think they deserved their money? After all, they planted things in the ground, and then they waited, and Hashem brought the rain. Everything they have is a matana from Hashem, is a chesed from Hashem. In Yerushalayim, they knew the truth. Now, that was true even in Sodom. That's true everywhere. Even if you have, like, the best job in the world and you have tenure and you can never be fired, still you need Hashem to protect you every day or else you're in trouble. But in Yerushalayim, they knew that everything they had came from Hashem. That every bit of money or lechem v'yayin, right, or food and drink that they had was a matana from Hashem, was a chesed from Hashem. They didn't deserve it. It was a chesed from Hashem. Already, that's a different attitude in Bein Adam L'Chaviro. If I really believe that what I have is a chesed from Hashem, then I'm going to be like Hashem and share that chesed with others. And I might be selfish, but on the average, a regular person would say, look, if I got money because someone was nice to me, then I'm going to, you know, pay it forward. Then I'm going to give it to others because after all, Hashem is nice with me, so I should be nice to others. I don't deserve this any more than anyone else, right? If it rained on my field and it flooded his field, you know, or the you know, some blight hit his field, then oh, I'm not a better person than him. Then Hashem is kind to me. So Hashem is kind to me, I should share the kindness. And I think that's really, that's a yesod in Judaism. A yesod in Judaism is, and I think this is the problem, if you want to hear my opinion, please do not share my opinion with people in America. Because they're not going to like my economic theories. Because my economic theory is that I think Hashem wants us to share, if we have a lot of money, we should share it with those who have less money. that's my economic theory. If I ran the country of Israel, I would say, you know, but I would say, yeah, we should we should tax people who make a lot of money, all the big tycoons and businessmen, and we should use the money, okay, maybe we shouldn't give handouts to the poor, they're going to waste. We should use the money to build good school for the kids, schools for the kids who are poor, and to help contribute money for employment so that people can get good jobs that pay a decent wage, and all these other things that help poor people. You know, and give them food if they're hungry. Right? And that's what's called the social justice. But I think the whole experiment, you know, remember communism? Who remembers communism? It's something you read about in the history books. When I was a kid, it was a real thing. When I was a kid, there were real communists out there. And what is communism? Everyone should share their money with everyone else. How well did that work? Really, really, really awfully. It was really terrible. It just led to these totalitarian dictatorships where it said everyone should share their money with everyone else, but like first I should hold on to it to make sure that it gets distributed fairly, and then I'm only going to give it to my friends and the people who are important in the communist party. It didn't work at all. And what's the basic problem? The basic problem is you can have any theory you want, but human beings do what they do because of their philosophical worldview, because of what they believe. And communists were atheists. They believe that only man ran the world. You know what? If I don't believe in God, if I believe that people run the world, then I'm going to want to run the world and take more for myself. Then if I have power, I'm going to want to take advantage of that. Why should I share it with others? That experiment failed. The only way to successfully fix society, the only way to really have a society where it makes sense to people, if it doesn't make sense, it's not a political system. It has to make sense. Why would it make sense that I should share my money, that I should give tzedakah, that I should care if someone else is poor? Why would it make sense that I should care? No, okay, so like I feel bad when I see them. Great, so I'll like make a law that I won't see them, that they won't be able to like come into my community. Why would I really care? The answer is, because if I really know that I'm not so great and that I don't deserve what I have, if I really know that what I have is a free matana, is a chesed, then all of a sudden it makes sense to me that I don't deserve everything in the world. That maybe the way the world works should be based on chesed and tzedek, and not based on everyone keeping as much as they can for themselves. And I think this is the difference between Sdom and Yerushalayim. This is where geography of Eretz Yisrael ties into theology, ties into political philosophy. That we live in, even to this very day, you know, most of us aren't farmers. Like, this doesn't speak to us as much, although when there's a drought in Israel, people start to get nervous, right? Because it could kill the economy, chas v'shalom. Even if we're not going to die, you know, the economy could really die if it doesn't rain for long enough, chas v'shalom. But even now, like, people in America, everyone in America has their own situation. But a lot of Jews in America feel very confident economically. They feel like it's easy to make a living, they're good jobs, and like, you know, they feel more like they take care of themselves. You move to Israel, and someone once asked me, they said, how am I supposed to make Aliyah? A student asked me. He says, I'm a logical person. I take a piece of paper, I write down like all the income I have in shekels, and I write down all the expenses, and it doesn't cover it. It doesn't match. How's that supposed to work? So I told him, if you do that, you shouldn't make Aliyah. You make Aliyah because somehow Hashem makes it work and the numbers aren't supposed to work out. Somehow Hashem makes it work. No one feels like they can make enough money in Israel. It's harder. The salaries are lower. Some of the expenses are high. It's hard to find a job. People come to Israel if they really feel like, everyone I've talked to in Israel feels like, well, yeah, it was really hard, but somehow Hashem like came through for me and he made this work out, which I didn't expect, and that work out. There's a lot more feeling like, I can't really support myself. It's really Hashem throwing me chesed that makes it work. which is really the authentic feeling of Yerushalayim and Eretz Yisrael to this very day. You have this a little more in Eretz Yisrael than in other countries. Now I just want to end with one ha'ara. What I really want you to do, but the time is late. I've already been speaking for too long. You know the rule of speakers, right? You speak for 5 minutes, tell a few jokes, introduce yourself. They love you. After a half hour, they're still with you. After an hour, they're just like, when is this guy going to finish already? And I'm like very close to an hour, and soon you're going to be saying, when is this guy going to finish already? Okay, at least now there are smartphones. It's not as bad, because you could be on your phone. But still, I have 5 minutes before you start saying, who invited this guy, and when is he going home? So let's see what we can do. What I really want to make you do is sit down and do a half-hour assignment on Makor 11. But I'm not going to. Instead, I'll just assume that since we read Makor 11 in Shul this past Shabbos, right, we all know it really, really well at this point, practically Baal Peh. So, the Parshas Bahar. Parshas Bahar says some amazing, fascinating things. What does it say about distribution of wealth in Parshas Bahar? Anyone know? How should we distribute wealth? Economics. Parshas Bahar. What was wealth in those days? What was the real wealth in those days? Land, right? A farm. Well, what do we do with the land every 50 years? We take it away from whoever bought it and give it back to the poor guy who sold it to him and distribute it equally. Right? We take out everything and divvy it up equally among everyone. Okay, how about like slaves? Like in those days, someone was poor, they sold themselves as a slave to the rich guy. What happened in the Yovel year? They all went free. Not only that, it doesn't say in this parsha, but it has to do with Shemitah. What if I owe someone a lot of money? What happens in the Shemitah year? I don't owe them anymore. All of a sudden, like, everyone's being equalized here. There's a lot of sharing going on. The rich people must have really hated this. As a matter of fact, we know they do, because if you're reading the Tanakh, they always try to not keep this, and the Nevi'im always yelled at them. Right? It was, you know, but it's like share, make everyone equal. Not only that, the Shemitah year. What happens in the Shemitah year? Who eats the food that grows in the Shemitah year? Everyone, poor people, rich people, right? Everything's like ownerless. Like basically, like here we have this system which is like radical economic equality, like radical sharing, like super duper tzedek, right? Like everyone, like of course we're not communists. We're not saying no one can have private property, right? For 49 years, you can amass a lot of wealth, but every once in a while you reset, and then okay, start again. You know, every once in a while we press the reset button, right? So now, simple question, like why is it logical to expect everyone to like, now nowadays freeing the slave sounds logical to us. But in the old days, I don't know, I bought him fair and square. Why should I free him? Why should I give back land that I bought fair and square? Why should I let everyone eat everything that grows in my field every Shemitah? Why should I not make someone pay money if they owe it to me? Like why is it logical that people should live this way? And the answer is very pashut. Look in, I'll just read two psukim from Makor 11. Two psukim from Makor 11. What are the two psukim? The two psukim are Chaf Gimel and Nun Hei. The Haaretz lo timacher tzmitot. The land is not sold forever. Ki li haaretz, because the land is mine, says Hashem. Ki geirim v'toshavim v'temadi. You're just tenants by me. Hashem says, you know why you have to share the land with other people, with other Jews? Because it's not your land. It's my land, says Hashem. If you believe everything belongs to Hashem, then it's a lot more logical that He'd want us to share it. Right? Nun hei. Why do we let the slaves free? Ki li b'nei Yisrael avadim. Avadai hem asher otzeiti etam eretz Mitzrayim ani asher otzeitem. Because we're all avdei Hashem. What do you mean? And none of us belong to each other. None of us belong to anyone. We all belong to Hashem. You know what? If we're all avadim of Hashem, then like, why should you be an avad to me? We're all avadim to Hashem. If everything belongs to Hashem, that changes all of life. If you found society based on the idea that Hashem made the world, Hashem gives us what we have, Hashem gives us our parnassah, He gives us our money, He gives us our food, He gave us our land, He gives us everything, we all belong to Hashem, then already, like, if I'm just an Eved of Hashem, like, why should I be a master of the world? Like, maybe I should just be the same as everyone else. If everything belongs to Hashem, why should I take all of it and leave other people none of it? If you really want social justice, I think the message of the Chumash is, where do you really get tzedek and equality and justice and ben adam l'chaveiro and perfect the world economically and politically? You get it if you start with recognizing that there's a master of the world who's above us, that none of us is God, because God is God, and we are merely Avdei Hashem. That's the key to fixing the world. It's actually fascinating. The word Yovel is only used one other time in the Chumash besides this past Shabbos' laning. Anyone know where it says the word Yovel in Chumash? I'll even let you peek, because there's only one more mucker. There's only one other place. What's that pasuk about? don't touch the mountain, you'll be punished, because you can only go up the mountain b'shochayovel, when there's a blowing of the shofar at Har Sinai. The shofar at Har Sinai is called Yovel. Only two words, Yovel and Chumash. Shofar of Har Sinai and the shofar they blew on Yom Kippur of the Yovel year. And Rashi says it was called Yovel because they blew a shofar. How do we count up to Yovel? Seven sevens. How do we count up to Har Sinai? Seven sevens of Sfiras HaOmer, right? Up to Har Sinai. What's it telling us here? Yovel is Ben Adam L'Chaveiro, is equality, is sharing, is tzedek. Har Sinai is Ben Adam L'Makom, is Kabbalat Malchut Shamayim, accepting the Torah and mitzvos. I think the Torah is hinting to us here, it's the same Yovel. You want to blow a shofar and all of a sudden fix society and have everyone share and everyone give charity and everyone be equal? That shofar has to come from someplace. That shofar has to have some meaning in it. If that shofar is an echo of your memory of the shofar from Har Sinai, when we said, yes, we're Avadim Nasav and Ishma, Hashem runs the world, we accept that everything's Hashem, then you can blow that shofar and fix the relationship between people and perfect your society. If you don't first have the Yovel of Har Sinai, then no, that shofar blow is just going to be, it's just going to be a ram's horn. It's not going to mean anything. It's going to be like Marx and Lenin, and you try to preach a lot of nice atheistic secular theories, and it all comes crashing down like a house of cards. I think that's really, you know, here's a little bit of a cheap trick. This is the Yovel of Yerushalayim today, right? 50 years anniversary of Yerushalayim. I think, since I didn't fight in the war 50 years ago, I don't know of any interesting stories, so I just have to connect things together in Torah. But I think that the Yovel and Yerushalayim are very connected. Yerushalayim, Malki Tzedek Melech Shalim is about how if for the rest of everyone's life, we say, I don't get credit for what I have, Hashem gets credit for what I have, that makes me a good person. That makes me a sharing, caring, generous person. And that's what Yovel is. If our society says everything is for Hashem, everything belongs to Hashem, He took us out of Mitzrayim. We're all abundant until Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim and gave us freedom. We had no land until Hashem gave us Eretz Yisrael. If we celebrate what Hashem gave us and not just what we have, and we recognize, it's a little easier when you hear about the miracles of how we got this land the third time around in the modern era, it's a little easier to remember that it certainly was not our credit that we won Milchemet Hatzmaot or Milchemet Sheshet Hayamim. It was all miracles from God that no one would have predicted in a million years. If you think about that, it's a little easier to say, well, maybe we should found a society where if we're all Hashem's people and we're all Hashem's children and His creatures, then maybe He wants us to treat each other a little better and to share with each other a little more. Because after all, it's not mine anyway. It's all His. And that's the message of Yovel and Yerushalayim. And hopefully it's something that, together with the sort of not-so-hidden message of we got to learn Tanakh by using Tanakh, the Parish on Tanakh, and we have to pay attention to the geography of Israel if we really want to understand what Hashem is trying to teach us in the Torah, something that we can keep with us and bring a little of the spirit of Yovel and Yerushalayim through our lives. Thank you, everyone, especially those who participated so great and especially those who were so busy taking notes that they didn't even have time to participate. And it was great being here once again for Yom Yerushalayim. And I wish everyone a great end of the year. And I hope I'll see you many, many, many times, although you might have to make an effort to, like, ask my wife if you can come to our house over the next few years in order to do so. Have a great day.
Thank you so much.